This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We do have a follow-up from yesterday when we were talking about Steve Cohen and the different bidders that had to make bids, first-round bids for the Mets yesterday. And obviously, last night revealed his bid, a complete package that includes the network for $4 billion. And it just feels like that when you get that kind of an offer,
what you talking about?
Yeah, there's no more first round. It's like no, you win. Yeah. So $4 billion. You don't even say going once, going twice. Right. No, we're done. Like, when do you ever take a minute to say, I don't know if I want $4 billion? No. Not sure.
Wrap it up, B.
Like, if you're Saul Katz, you're walking into the Wilpons, wherever they are, the Wilpons, and you just be like, no, we're taking this deal. Yeah, exactly. Because that's generational money.
Hey,
you're talking about setting up your family? That's generational money.
You get a half a billion. You get a half a billion. You take a half a billion. You take a half a billion. And we ain't even cashed in the life insurance policy yet.
So
we're already up.
Yeah, so we got plenty to talk about on that. We'll get to that a little bit later on, though, of course, because Tom Thibodeau, and this is Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So Tom Thibodeau yesterday, according to Woj and others, did have his formal interview with the Knicks. And all this stuff is being done, obviously, via Zoom. Nothing's being done in person because they can't. But, you know, there's a relationship there that has been there for a long time. They know each other well. There's not much more Tom needs to say to them, but they are things they have to discuss. Leon and Wes have their plan and their vision for where the franchise is going to head, and they want to make sure that Tom's on the same page. There are others that they have talked to. We saw reports already of Jason Kidd, who has had meetings with them as well. Mike Woodson is having a meeting with them. And don't sleep on that name, by the way. Mike Woodson is a guy that you might be glazing over. But if you check the list of all-time coaches in Knicks history, he is fourth in winning percentage. Fourth. The guy didn't coach here long, but when he was here, they won. They were top five in three-point shooting, and they were top 10 in defense. They were also, by the way, they didn't turn the ball over ever. Their offenses were very immaculate. That's how everybody's playing right now. So if you want to talk about somebody that wants to get the job and then also wants to finish the job that he started because Phil wouldn't give him a chance to, that is absolutely a name that you have to keep in mind if Tom Thibodeau is not the guy. Now, what I'm hearing about Tibbs is this, is that while it seems like he would be the obvious leading candidate, that it seems like the Knicks want him, but they're going to also interview a bunch of other people. About 12 people are on this list, a lot of assistant coaches that you haven't heard of. But I'm here to tell you that those are the names you have to worry about, or not worry about, but focus on. Because Jamal Mosley is a defensive specialist who has grown now up under one of the top coaches in the league in Dallas, in Rick Carlisle. And he's somebody that they really like. They also really like this guy, Chris Fleming. Now, Chris Fleming was with the Nets for a couple of years, and he worked with Kenny Atkinson. But he was in Chicago last year, and he's been rising now as a well-known offensive mind as an assistant coach. And some people think he eventually has the chops to be a head coach, but he's fairly young. And I see a scenario where the Knicks want to make sure that, okay, if we go get an experienced name as a head coach, we want to load up that the assistant coach. We want to load up the bench, the staff, with young, up-and-coming coaches who have the mind for where the game is headed. Because sometimes you get stuck with older coaches, and they stick to their system, and they don't want to evolve.
Oh, like the triangle.
Great example. So that's something that you have to ask yourself. Does Tom Thibodeau want to do that, or does he want to bring in his own people because that's what he's comfortable with? Older coaches don't like to bring in young assistants because they feel like, oh, I'm just going to hire my replacement. I don't want to bring in somebody I don't know. So that could be a caveat here, and that could be a bit of a pushback. You don't know. Tibbs also has his eyes on other jobs, so there could be that pressure of if the Knicks don't hire him sooner rather than later, that he could end up saying, well, I like the Nets job. I like the Rockets job if it opens, if D'Antoni's out. What happens if the Sixers completely blow up, like a lot of people think? There's some talk that maybe Brett Brown is going to be the first move they make there before they try to split up Embiid and Simmons. What if Houston. He goes there instead?
Houston as well.
Yes, Houston with D'Antoni, as I mentioned. So, you know, there are other options for a guy like Tom. And so he might say, I don't have to give in on what the Knicks want me to do. They have to worry about losing me. So that's it. That's why when people say it's a slam dunk, the Knicks are going to hire him, I tell you it's not. It doesn't mean they won't end up with him. The chances are, the odds are he probably will get the job. But what I'm saying is that right now it's not a fait accompli, because there are things that they want to do going forward, and it's going to be a battle of control.
Right.
That's my coaching staff. I'll do what I want with it. This is the way I want to play. And they might say, well, we want this, and he might not be amenable to that. And so that's something to keep an eye on. Plus also the guaranteed years, the amount of money, because they've been doing that with coaches as well over the years. So that's why I'm saying, while everybody is quick to write, Thibodeau's the guy, he's getting the job, it's a matter of time, I'm here to tell you that if it was a done deal, it would have been done already.
Yeah,
that's what I do know. If it was a done deal, it would have been done already. So there's a reason why it hasn't been completed yet. And there's a reason why they are talking to a lot of other experienced coaches.
So what you're saying so far is that Woodson, from what I'm gathering, to me, is the A-Rod. He's the underdog, but he's the guy that could potentially...
I think Kidd is an intriguing name. But that's also a guy that, while he's super smart,
hard to work with,
he can be. He's not a very consistent personality, because there's days where it's like, all right, these are my players. This is, and then it's like, no, I want these guys now. Or it's hard to read him day to day. You saw that in Brooklyn. You saw that obviously in Milwaukee as well, where it's like, I want this player. No, we're going to play this way now. No, we're going to change it this way now. And you gotta have a focus. Maybe he's changed. I don't know. He's very smart though. Super smart guy. But Mike Woodson, like I'll say it this way. Everybody knows that I know him. I did a show with him when he was with the Knicks. I got to know him well, so I'm not going to try to hide that. It's obvious. Just like Kenny, personally for me, I'd love to see it. Woody would be the easiest coach to hire, because he's already won here. He knows how to do it here. He'd be open to bringing in anybody on the coaching staff.
Right.
He's a teacher. So when you have young players, he likes to teach, but he knows how to handle vets because he coached vets as well. So, like, Woodson there's no sizzle. Nobody's going to get excited. Like, oh, Mike Woodson. What? They're just going to say, oh, that guy. But he never got to finish the job. And I do think there's something to that. The job's personal to him. He played for the Knicks. He coached the Knicks before. So there's blood in the ground here. That's why it might not have sizzle. But to me, the safest hire would be him. Safest. Tibbs, as you know, would be the biggest name as far as experience, success. But you also know that the reputation of that, he does burn players out. He does burn out at times with the teams he's with. He's extremely overbearing, which you want that, because this is a franchise that has been wayward. You need somebody to come in and organize things. He will do that. But there is that question of, will players say, I want to go play for him? Or will they say, I don't want to go there, because it's just too intense. It's
miserable.
Yeah, and so that's the other question is...
He's a grinder. He grinds his players down, and he mentally fatigues them because he's so demanding, and he's so in your face where he's not building them up. I get the feeling from Woody that he's a guy that builds them up, that takes guys to the side, has conversations with them, where I can hear Tibbs just kind of being at his wit's end and kind of yelling at him and saying, hoping that the player comes back and responds to his yelling. That can burn a player out, because he feels like, especially a young player, and it depends on how...
His main guys he plays, like, he just drives them into the ground. Like, you're going to play a ton of minutes.
These are the guys I believe in, and this is how we're doing it. Forget all this load management, all that type of stuff. And that's what I'm saying. That's where it can get a bit difficult, and that's where you want him to kind of ease up on some of the power, say that, hey, this is a collaboration. Yeah, this is Leon Rose's first gig. This is Worldwide West's first gig. But they want to do things their way, too, and they have their own thoughts and own opinions about how they want to run their team. So Tibbs going to have to be able to give as well. But when you find older coaches, especially older coaches that's on their third stint potentially as a head coach, they're set in their ways, and they're like, if I'm going out, I'm going out my way. Because realistically, if he fails as the New York Knicks head coach, where can he ever go again? That's three opportunities, three bites at the apple.
Other than
Kurt Rambis was the only person I've ever known that got like 10 head coaching jobs, but it's because he was an assistant for people that continued to get fired.
Yeah, well, it's why a lot of guys, when they want to take this job, they always ask for a 5-year deal, You know, they ask for extra money. Like, they try to make sure that, well, because if it doesn't go well in, like, the first 2 years and the media's on my case and the fans are booing and everybody gets an impatient, like, it always happens here, I get to walk away and at least I have my golden parachute, you know? Like, that's what you want if you're a coach. And if I'm an agent, that's what I also demand. You know, look at the history here. Coaches burn out quickly. You know, you go through them fast. So I gotta give my guy some type of financial insurance in case it fails.
Right.
And so that's something that I think you also have to think about when it comes to Tom, because what you just said is true.
Who's a dark horse, though? Who's a dark horse? Like, who's somebody that's not on the radar? Because we know it's always that, too. You know World Wide West been behind the scenes in the shadows before he made himself official. You know he been having these off the record type of conversations, because that's what World Wide West, the aura, the mystique of who he is all about. So you mean to tell me before he took this official job, he didn't do some official business when he was off the books, knowing that he was going to get the job? I just don't see that one, man. So give me somebody that's off the books, man, because I don't want to point to the same people that everybody else point to. I want you to point to somebody, because you the man that sat in LeBron's bushes. You the one that went through his trash. You the one that was sitting up there in the shadows trying to figure out where the hell he was going. Are you the one who sold him the gingham shirt, the picnic shirt that he wore for
the
decision?
Nice shirt. It's a very nice shirt.
I know. It might have been out of your closet or out of your personal collection. That's what I'm saying.
I have one that's very similar to that one. It's a very nice shirt. Liberty Shirt Company.
So tell me, who's somebody that's off the radar that could potentially become a sneaky candidate?
I'm going to give you a name that probably will piss a lot of Knicks fans off. It'll probably make everybody go, oh, no. Right? You're gonna react, but then stop yourself.
Okay.
Because when I tell you why this name just lingers and won't go away, it's sort of like the jingle Costanza, right? Like it's there and you can't help it, because it just, every time, and I sit and think about this job and the best candidate and everything that Leon said about what he's looking for, somebody that can take a team from development stage to winning, with relationships, the ability to work with the front office. So that's very important. How this organization also needs a front man. They don't have one. Wes works in the background. Leon works. They always move in silence. These are not guys that are front and center. It's a team that always needs one guy, one voice. Somebody who's going to be at the podium all the time, answering questions, that can handle the media, that has all that charisma about them. When they went and they got Pitino, when they went and they got Riley, when they get those kind of coaches that are good with the media, that are good front and center, it's very important. I mean, I go all the way back to the history, because I've written a couple of history books on the Knicks. Joe Lapchick was the St. John's coach, was great success at St. John's. And Ned Irish, who was running the Knicks at the time, offered him a boatload of money and said, we need you to coach the Knicks. And he said, no, I don't want to do it. Don't want to do it. But they almost made him. They gave him an offer he couldn't refuse. You got to take this job, because they needed that guy. And then Lapchick led them to 3 straight finals appearances and was one of the great coaches of the franchise's history. So when I tell you that, even though this name is not on the list of candidates that they're interviewing, they don't need to interview him because they know him. And it's one of those things that if they're just not comfortable with whatever scenario they have for all the candidates they've talked to, this would be the easiest way to go, or the obvious way to go, when it's like, okay, we're just going to do this then. And that is John Calipari. Now, listen, like, I know Cal's already said he's not interested. I know he said it over and over again, but things have changed. The landscape has changed on many levels, and here's one to keep in mind. College basketball this season, we don't know what kind of season they're going to have. We don't know if they're going to start in November, or are they going to start in January? Are they going to be allowed to practice in October, or are they going to have to wait until January? You have no idea. Recruiting has completely changed for college basketball now. And with the addition of the G League paying what they pay for some star players, and the one and done is pretty much on its way out in another couple of years, college basketball won't be the same. So for Cal, if there was ever a time, this would be it. And also, Leon Rose and William Wesley, all you have to do is Google it. They are all very close. They have worked together for many years. Can I point out that last season in the NBA, or this season in the NBA, 28 players, a league high, 28 players come from Kentucky, more than any other college program in the country. Kentucky has the most NBA players in the league. He has coached all of them. And so if there was ever a time for John Calipari to at least listen,
okay,
this would be the time, and especially when, and I'm going to go here too, Anthony Davis is going to be a free agent. Where did he play?
Okay, Kentucky.
Devin Booker might want to leave Phoenix. Where did he play?
Kentucky.
You know, call Anthony Towns. Like, you don't have to think too hard about this to realize.
See, there you go, putting out hope again.
But this is a completely different story now, because then you tell him, bring in a Mosley, bring in a Fleming, let them be the defense and offense coordinators. You be that you know, the CEO, the front man. You help us get players too. You know those players all trust you. They all love you.
Yeah. Boogie Cousins out
and
there.
And he looks at Leon and Wes, and I trust them. They won't give up on me after a year or two. If we struggle early on, whatever it is, I can trust them. We've worked together for 30 years. If there's ever a time, Calipari should, if they want to. Now, I don't even know if they want to. I'm not saying I'm basing this on anything I've heard. I'm just saying, when you read all the tea leaves and you talk to people in basketball like I've talked to, that's the name that they keep saying, like, man, I'm waiting for Cal. Cal, you just feel like it's inevitable. If they aren't thrilled with Tibbs, if they don't feel like anybody else blows them out of the water, that would be that would be that, like you just told me. What is the dark horse? What is the outside the box?
Yeah.
That's the one that I think would really catch everybody's attention and make you go, okay, that seems to make sense. People have speculated he shot it down, and I'm not saying it's anything happening now, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't keep an eye on it just in case.
Well, let's check the boxes, right? Let's go down the boxes, the list, right? Is he a CEO? Is he a face of the franchise? Check.
Yes. Is he a front man? Of course. Yeah, absolutely a front man. 100%.
Because he's coached 28 of the NBA superstars, does he make the Knicks cool again?
To the players?
Yes.
I would think so. They all love him.
Is he?
Name me a former Kentucky player that says, I can't stand Cal. They all love him.
He talks about everybody talks about the family atmosphere, understanding that a lot of these guys are coming one and done, in and out.
Checks in with them all the time, looks in, all that stuff.
Now, is he a guy that plays well with others? To your point, that's the big thing. Because if Tibbs says that he wants to bring his staff, but then Calipari on the other side is saying, hey, I'm all about grooming the next generation as well.
Who do you want to bring in with
me? Let's do that. So that's four checks.
I can see that. Well, again, because if he talks to Leon, he talks to Wes, they all know each other. If they say, let's do this, yeah, let's do this.
So is he more John Beilein or is he more Larry Brown? Can he make the adjustment? What I'm saying is, can he make the adjustment?
Well,
to being
I
able
think
to demand the
jump,
respect.
Look, it was was it 20 years ago he tried it with the Nets and it was a complete failure, right? We know this.
Right.
It was 20 years ago. That's a long time ago. The game and the league has changed dramatically. When he tried it, it was a veterans league. It's not anymore. This is a league of young players now. So much different. Of course, veterans are still ones with the power, but those veterans, like I said, there's 28 players in the league, and all of them, it's the most out of one program, and all of them played for Cal.
What do I always tell you, what people revert to when they are making decisions and they want to make sure that they're successful? What's the most important thing? They always go with people that they know, that they know that they can trust.
Trust,
so if
is
you're
everything.
Talking about Wesley, has his butt on the line, first time as executive. You got Leon, has his butt on the line. It makes total sense that they would trust
and want to go
with somebody that they know, like Calipari.
And let's also throw in this last caveat. And again, that's Straight Talk Podcast, Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. 800-919-3776 the number to react to this. Let's also understand that next season, when it does begin in December, whatever, the Nets will have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on the court. For the Knicks, they have to have something to counter. Something to make sure they're at least competitive or interesting. This certainly would be that. Wouldn't you think?
Absolutely.
This would be that. Now, am I endorsing this? Is this what I think should happen? No, I don't. Because my question is Cal, does he want this? I think that if there's ever a time, this would be the time. But it doesn't mean he wants it. And I imagine he's probably going to deny and say he doesn't want it. And that's fine. But if Tibbs isn't the guy that they feel comfortable working with going forward for whatever reason, or if they're not ready to pay him or whatever it is, and Woodson, Atkinson, Kidd, whoever else it is, hasn't said enough or done enough to convince you, I just feel like that name Calipari is just hanging out there right now around the Knick franchise because of his connections to those who took over the franchise and in the leadership. And it is something that I feel would be the sizzle that a lot of Knicks fans might be looking for because of the connections he has to a lot of players. But again, for Knicks fans, I imagine you would say that's the Knicksiest thing they could ever do. So my question is it? So we audibled here, deciding to go continue with calls since we have a lot of people that want to discuss what we opened with on the Knicks and the coaching search and a name that they're not interviewing, but I just feel like just hovers out there, and that would be John Calipari. Hard not to feel like if they don't come to terms with Thibodeau, who they interviewed yesterday, according to Woj, but how much more do you need to know about him? You have basically him, Mike Woodson, Kenny Atkinson, Jason Kidd, and then a lot of inexperienced assistants who they love. There's a couple of really, like I said, I mentioned him earlier. I'll mention him again. Jamal Mosley, Chris Fleming. You know, those are some names you got to keep an eye on because they're up-and-coming coaches. They might not be ready to be a head coach in New York, but it doesn't mean they might not want him on the staff. So that's something to also keep in mind on the coaching staff. And you want to bring in young assistants. Would a veteran coach want that? Or would he say, no, I'm bringing in my own people? So with that in mind, that's why I say, if you don't come to terms with somebody fairly soon, does Tibbs suddenly come back into the picture even though he's saying no? And is there anybody else that you think?
You mean Calipari?
Well, yeah, I meant Calipari. I'm sorry, okay. I said Tibbs. Yeah, John Calipari. Now, yeah, there could be other names. Somebody on Twitter mentioned Jerry Stackhouse. Again, I still think you got to take an experienced head coach.
Yes,
at this point,
Stack has been getting rave reviews for a couple of years.
He did a tremendous job for the Raptors in their G League, and now he's coaching in college. But yeah. That's one. Mark in Oceanside has another one. Go ahead, Mark. How you doing, man?
Hey guys, thank you so much for getting me on. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Yeah, man. How about bringing a local kid back and bringing my Hofstra boy Jay Wright back home?
You know what? Why that's it's an interesting name, but I'll tell you why for two reasons. Number one, Jay's not really a local guy. He's actually a Philly guy. But he did coach at Hofstra, you're right. And he did a great job there, as well as obviously what he's doing at Villanova is tremendous. But here's why Jay Wright, while the Knicks have always kind of like been in his periphery, privately he's always said it's interesting to him, but I think also what you gotta keep in mind for him. If he's leaving Villanova for a job, it would be for the Sixers. That's his dream job. And that, I mean, as far as an NBA job goes, it would be the Sixers. And watch what the Sixers do. If they don't get it right, they come back together and Simmons and Embiid. You see Embiid, by the way, show up in the hazmat suit? I mean, he's Harry Hazmat getting out of the car, like at Orlando.
I tell you, he's great, old, but healthy.
He's funny, but yeah, he always has fun. But if they don't get it right and the Sixers look like they did when we had the stoppage and they're a mess, I could see the Sixers deciding they've got to make a coaching change. Yeah. Jay, to me, is the first candidate you talk to for that job. Absolutely, 100% for that job. That's what you would do. So that's why I think Jay, if I'm repping Jay, I'm like, let's wait and see what happens in Philly. Because that's really what he would want. Kenny in Brooklyn, Kenny.
I just want to make a quick point, and I have to get back to my bar study review. But I want to talk about Mike Miller because I think, with guys like Calipari, we're focusing, again, too much on personality. And that was my problem with Fizdale. These are really nice guys that have great relationships in the NBA, but not much success. Mike Miller did a heck of a job last year. The team, that was on that looked listless, clueless last year before Miller stepped in, suddenly looked like a competent NBA team. Knox was playing defense. Mitch was catching alley-oops. Frank looked way more competent on offense, and I think Miller deserves the credit. You just talked about Stackhouse coaching the G League. Miller's done all that. He's done all these things. He's shown that he's experienced, that he has experience. He has a temperament for New York. You saw how he handled all those press conferences. When constantly Mills and when Mills got fired, and no one from the Knicks said anything, it was always Miller who was stepped in front of the cameras and answered questions.
Well, he had to. He had no choice. Kenny, I'll say this about Mike. I'll say this about Mike Miller. You're right. True professional. 100%. Everything you said about him is correct. I think he will be part of whatever they do going forward.
Yep.
I don't know that to be sure. I know they did interview him. They gave him that courtesy. But I do have a belief that he will be part of whatever coaching staff they have going forward. I don't think they're going to make him the head coach. But it doesn't mean that they won't say, you know what, though? We like everything that you're about. And whoever comes in, we're going to, you know, like, you should work with them.
Yeah.
I do think he's earned that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But as head coach material, especially in New York, right. I do think you still got to have some personality, somebody that it factor. Yeah, I do think that has to be.
You got
to
be able to move the needle. And I don't know if basketball is like football, but in football, a lot of times, you know, assistant coaches from other staffs are retained at the request of the ownership or at the general manager. So I think, you know, Mike Miller would be perfect for that. You want as many quality coaches with head coaching experience as you can, whether it was in the interim version or not. I think it would be a great asset to whoever they bring in. And maybe even Kenny Atkinson too, but I think Kenny don't want to take that step back because it may
potentially
be a lot of jobs out there where he can be a head coach. I mean, he's proven that he can do that he can handle the process, but I don't know if you take a guy like Kenny Atkinson, who may be known as a builder, not a finishing piece, if he can go to a place like Houston that maybe have a potential opening with those veterans that's ready to win now as well. So I don't know if it's another opportunity out there for a coach that's seen as a developer, because a lot of these rosters that are going to have job openings are teams that have aspirations and believe that they should be able to compete right now.
Yeah, that's what's going to be interesting, and that's why I brought that up too, because does Tom Thibodeau want to keep Mike Miller? You know, does he want that? Like, that's the biggest question of this whole thing. If you're Tom, no. I bring in my guys, right? I bring in my guy. And is that going to be a hang-up? That's all stuff you got to wonder about. And that's what the last couple of days, that's what I've been wondering about. And so that's why I keep saying, while we go through this process, the name that keeps coming back to me that they haven't interviewed, but they don't need to. They know him, is John Calipari. But we're also keeping an eye on, of course, Bart, is what we talked about at length yesterday. And that is the bidding for the sale of the Mets. And while we don't expect there to be a decision made immediately, it was supposed to be first round, we did get reports of the bids that have been made or were put in yesterday. And, of course, the one that got the most attention, well, A-Rod, J-Lo, Rapoli, his group, the reports is that their bid was $1.7 billion for just the team. I love peanuts. How you make that face, like, please.
Peanuts, man. That's a billion less than what Cohen offered 3 months ago.
Yeah.
But keep going.
Well, the one that really got everybody's attention was the report that Steve Cohen, who had said he was out and he was done, of course, every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. He apparently offered $2 billion for the team. And then put a little more cheese on the taco, like you would say.
Just a little?
A little cheese.
Shredded cheese, or did he put blocks of cheese?
No, this is that expensive cheese.
I
don't know what it is. Yeah.
This is truffle oil-infused cheese.
Ooh.
Truffle cheese.
$2 billion also if you throw in the network.
Ooh.
So for the entire package, you're getting $4 billion, the Mets, the building, and the network.
Cash.
Yeah.
Did he say he'll bring it up with a Brinks truck? He like, no, just here.
He'd be like Jordan. He'll show up at the golf course with a duffel bag.
Like, here you go.
That's what MJ does. He's here got a duffel bag.
Don't worry. I got 10 more billion in the bank. Don't even worry about it.
And that's the thing I want to remind people. We said it yesterday. The most mind-blowing thing to this whole thing to me is that if you're a Mets fan, Steve Cohen gets the team. Your owner is by far the richest owner in the sport. By $10 billion.
Not
that's
incredible.
Like, the next richest owner is the Nationals, and he's at 4. Your owner would be at 14. Like, that is in a sport that does not yet have a salary cap. That is a major advantage.
Yo.
And you're not going to spend $4 billion to have a team that sucks.
Yo. He offered $2 billion for the network. Like,
give me the network too.
Yeah. since when did a network become worth more than the team? It's more than the Yankees?
For SNY, which just has the Mets. You know, that of course is part of the concern. Now, Charles Gasparino does have some more reporting on this, and we've been referencing him throughout the coverage of this. Now, he works for Fox Business. And earlier today, he gave some insight on what he knows about what's going on with this, the bidding war, the bidding derby is how he put it. So he says Steve Cohen's interest in the team is well-defined, but there's no auction just yet on the network, on SNY. When there is, his eyeball $2 billion valuation should drop dramatically. Network makes money but has tons of debt, which will cut its price significantly. Now, that's typical of all regional sports networks, so it's nothing new there. It's not a shot at SNY whatsoever. It's just reality. Now, I do find it interesting, though, that he put that number out there just to get their attention, but when they start negotiating, he'll probably look into it more. I don't know. Okay, I can't give you $2 billion for this thing.
Sold!
But it's for shock value. There's no question it's for shock value, and that's true. It's getting the attention. Now, also, Gasparino says that lots of reporting about the seven bidders, but no one can figure out who they are outside of, obviously, Cohen, A-Rod, J-Lo, Rapoli and Viola, Harris Blitzer as well. So if there's others, we don't know who they are.
What if it's Bezos?
Could you imagine?
What if Bezos say, "Man, I'm tired of you peasants
and then he puts a new Amazon headquarters right there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna be worth a trillion in 6 years. Yeesh. How about this? Y'all move aside. Let the grown man talk.
Yeah, let the real money guy come in. Yeah, please. All right. So more on this now. he said. Now this is the thing that Gasparino says.
His own money.
You're gonna like this one though. You're gonna really like this one. He said that there's interesting trash talking in the bidding with people repping Cohen telling other bidders how much money the Mets are losing to kind of get the competitors to
drop the offer.
Yeah, like to feel like, whoa, like this might not be a good deal for us, right? Like to scare them off. So he's just trash talking, like, you know, like it's hemorrhaging money, that team. Hemorrhaging money, and you don't have enough. Like real money, like, again.
Don't make, you know, me
real, like Cohen's basically, Cohen's people are basically like saying, like, our guy's got real money.
Yeah. Don't make
you're trying to put money together.
He just, that's a, the $4 billion just from his right pocket. Don't make him go in the left pocket or the back pocket.
So there's that, all right? And here's the one that if I'm a Mets fan, which I'm not, but you are, so this should scare you. This is the one thing that Jim Baumbach yesterday from Newsday called the $2.6 billion question that even Darren Revelle also could not completely dispute. And that is this, that leaks from the Mets side are saying Jeff Wilpon prefers to sell to A-Rod.
I wonder why.
That goes back to what we said yesterday. What we said yesterday, of course, was, could you put in the deal? All right, we can't match the $2 billion that Cohen is offering, but we'll go to 1.7 and we'll let Jeff stay on in baseball operations for the next couple of years, which is what Jeff wants. A friend of mine told me that knows Jeff. He said it's the reason why this is part of this. They wanted to be part of the deal is because it's all he knows. He loves baseball. He does fancy himself as a baseball guy.
Well,
what you can argue whether he is or not, I mean, that's debatable, of course. But it's just the fact that he's sitting there going like, I don't want to retire. I don't want to go down and sit to some island and just do nothing with my life. I like doing this. I want to keep doing it. So can we put in the deal that I can keep doing this? So and most people that are around the Mets say that would be a big mistake.
This is why the family has to step in. Right, and say, listen, you're not about to mess this up for all of us. Nobody care about you and your little fantasy of running the team. This is what we'll do. We're going to sell this team, get this $4 billion, and to John Withorpe's point, we're going to go buy the Tampa Bay Rays for less than $1 billion, and then you can have your team, you can play in the sandbox, and we're going to take our $3 billion, we're going to split that up. How about that, Mr. Jeffrey? I mean, it's no
but
way.
If you're,
but
Bart, take your emotion out of it as a fan. If you're A-Rod, and you know I can't match this guy's money.
My point.
Like my group, I mean, Rapoli's got real money. He doesn't. It's not fake money. That's real money.
Yeah,
Viola's got real money. He owns a franchise right now. All right, it's an NHL one, but he still owns one.
But
like, they've got real money, and then you got A-Rod, obviously A-Rod, J-Lo not putting in nearly as much. Right, obviously they're not. But the point is that if I knew this would get me over the top and they would choose my bid, even though it's lower, over the $4 billion, like the mega deal that I would get from Cohen, which I think in the end, when you look at it, he's not giving them $2 billion for the network. I think that'll definitely go down. That's just a shock value offer. But still, if you're the Wilpons, would you say, I'd rather take the 1-7 and give it to A-Rod, and then Jeff can stay on, and A-Rod can say, no. I can keep him. Like I told you about you and Woody Johnson. If Woody said, no, Christopher Johnson needs to stay on, and you had a bunch of billionaires that wanted to buy the Jets, and they wanted you to front the group, would you say, I can handle Chris?
Screw Jeff. Jeff, you don't always get what you want, and you're not the billionaire. You're not the owner. Your dad was. You need to get back and stop messing it up for everybody else, because everybody else wants to move on and do other things with their life. This is your little pet project. If that's what you want, take whatever your cut is, invest it, earn some money, and get your own group and buy another team. But if I can get $4 billion with as much money as we've been operating on, I mean, we've been trying to pay back this Madoff stuff. We've been leveraging and taking loans from SNY. No. I want to be able to write all my debt off. I don't owe nobody nothing. I want to pay all my debt off, and I don't care if your feelings are hurt. It's other people involved than just you, Jeff. It's other. What's the other family that's part of the ownership group? They want to sever all ties. They want to make sure that they don't have. They want to make sure they ain't got to deal with none of this stuff if Fred passes away. So let's do this now, because I don't want to, after the fact, have to spend another 2-3 years in court trying to unravel this web that we have about how much goes here, how much goes there, or Jeff's still a part of it for 5 years, and you're trying to sell your part as a cash family, or you're trying to make sure that you get all your part away, but Jeff's still holding on to it, trying to renegotiate. Nah, man, let's go ahead, and you take your money, I take my money, I invest in this, everybody's going to make some money, because we sell this thing for $4 million. We didn't buy it for $1 billion. We can divvy this pie up, and we can all go along and go to the next phase of our life and enjoy this money that we can't get rid of if we invest it right, because it's wealth, not rich.
It's going to be interesting, and it's obviously a story you got to keep following. But man, if somebody offers you $4 billion, you just go, let's go. I'll take it. It's part now. We're presented by.
I'm sorry, you watch Shark Tank. You watch Shark Tank. You ever see what Mr. Wonderful, you see what Damon Johnson, sometimes you see what Mark Cuban say. They say, hey, Mark, can I ask him? No. You either make the deal now or I'm out. If my money ain't no good for you right now, then I'm out. And you stuck with what you stuck with.
Yeah, well, that is where we are right now with that. All right, with Barton on, presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Barton, another audible. Hurry up and swallow that, whatever you just
did. Phrasing.
And I just
whatchamacallit.
Okay. What is it called?
Whatchamacallit.
Right, what's it called?
The candy bar is called a whatchamacallit.
Why don't you know the name?
It's called a whatchamacallit.
You don't remember the commercial? You don't know the name. Come on. I know what a whatchamacallit is. You don't know the commercial.
I do.
Anybody out there that knew the commercial I was referencing, tweet at Barton Hunt and say I knew what you were talking about.
Okay. All
right. We're gonna Omaha right now. I sent it to you in your email, so check it. Blitz or Prevent now.
This is Blitz or Prevent.
How much time?
Let's see if you are paying attention or not.
All right,
it's in your email.
I'm ready. Don't know any matter. Let's do it.
All right, let's go. All right, the Dallas Independent School District Superintendent told MSNBC Thursday morning that he has significant doubts the sport, meaning football, will be able to be played this season amid the pandemic. Quote, I don't see how we can pull that off. There's been some discussion of moving it to spring, but we'll have to wait and see. I seriously doubt that we can pull that off. Blitz or Prevent. One way to get people to wear masks in Texas is to tell them that the only way you'll see high school football this fall is if you're wearing a damn mask.
That might be right, man. Listen, that is King down there. Cromartie's down there in Houston. Deion, you see him with his team on Instagram practicing. I mean, that is like religion, right? That is religion. Instead of going to Sunday school service, you go to football game. I mean, this is year round, man. Spring ball, spring game. They're doing 7-on-7 right now.
It's religion.
You might be able to get them Friday Night Lights. You might be able to get them
mask on. If you tell them that, right? If you go, listen, I don't know if we can play this thing. Well, if everybody just wears their mask, social distance, stop going out to bars and stop partying, maybe by August, maybe we could do it.
Billy, get your ass in the house. Billy, get your ass in the house right now. Don't come out. I'm going to beat you till your skin fall off. Get your ass in the house, Billy.
That is one way to do it, my man. It is one way to do it. All right, Zion Williams. See this story? Zion Williamson's stepfather solicited and accepted a $400,000 payment from a marketing agent in October 2018, which is prior to when Zion played his one season at Duke. That's according to a court motion and sworn affidavit that was filed by his former marketing representative's attorneys in federal court. Now, that's getting to be an ugly battle between him and these people that used to do marketing for him. Zion's lawyers are saying this evidence that there's evidence that proves his claims are completely false and that he doesn't even know these people. And it's just a, quote, desperate and irresponsible attempt to smear Mr. Williamson and the very time he has the opportunity to live his dream playing professional basketball. Blitzer Prevent, considering past history, it's almost impossible to believe that a player, it's almost impossible to believe the player in any of these cases. We just assume that money is exchanged under the table.
Of course, blitz this, man. Of course they took money. Of course. I mean, not of course. Let me protect myself. 99.9%. Yes, I think that he took it.
It is my opinion.
99.9%, do I care? No, because he brought more value to that team. If you want to get into the opportunity to be able to bid for his services, to represent him, and potentially you make tens of millions of dollars off of his name as a fee for being his marketing guy, then that's a chance you risk. It's just like when people were going to talk to Deion Sanders, you had to bring him a Rolex before he even had a conversation with you. That's the cost of doing business. If you want to swim with the big dogs, you got to do what the big dogs do. And the big dogs pay for the opportunity to have the right to speak. It doesn't guarantee. It just gives you an opportunity that you may be chosen. And listen, you missed out on this time. Next time, come a little harder, a little stronger. Maybe you need to go get somebody that's 13 years old and start giving money then instead of waiting so late in the game. That's the game we play.
You gotta
pay
start
for
paying
the services.
That's why eventually you got to start letting them at least make money off of, like, again, the marketing stuff. Make money off their names. All right. The NFL distributed to its players new game day protocols. Have you heard about some of these?
I did.
Because they have to play, going to play through a pandemic, so you got to have protocols. One of them.
Get in the house, Billy. Get your ass in the house. We want football.
One of them has been mocked by players almost immediately. It's a ban on what's become a new soccer-inspired tradition in the sport. We're seeing it in the NBA as well. Post-game jersey exchanges between opposing players. Richard Sherman, for one, tweeted, this is a perfect example of the NFL thinking in a nutshell. Players can go engage in full contact game and do it safely. However, it's unsafe for them to exchange jerseys after the game. Kenny Vaccaro says, wait, we can tackle each other, but we can't exchange a jersey. Come on right now. Blitzer Prevent, the players have an obvious point here.
This is too easy. I can't even prevent this. I got to blitz this. I mean, because really, like, come on, man. Like, I've touched this jersey 25 times. Like, what are we talking about?
I sweated all over that jersey.
Right. Matter of fact, I dropped my mouthpiece on it and put my mouthpiece back in my mouth. So whatever he got, I got anyway. Who cares? Like, what are we talking about? And that's like the Captain Literal Man. It's like somebody's coming up with protocol. They're not thinking it all the way through. They're just trying to come up with their list. And they're having some long nights as they're trying to figure out how they're going to go about playing football. They know they have to play it, but these type of requests is asinine. Like, how do you expect them to tackle each other, be over around each other, and still not be able to do, you know, be able to do that as well? I mean, not only are you tackling them, somebody else tackling them, so you got other people's DNA all on the jersey, depending on what position the kid plays. Come on, man, you're killing me, Petey.
You're killing me, Petey. Oh, my God. That's a good one, though. It's hilarious. No, I can't. You don't want to spread the virus. What do you mean? That jersey I just bled all over? All right, last but not least. What I just told you is nothing compared to what baseball's doing right now. So the sport that involves spitting, patting butts, adjusting your junk, and high fives.
Amazing.
All right. Out of all those I just told you about, all but one are banned. Guess which one is not banned?
Softball.
Yeah, that's right. You're allowed to adjust your junk still.
My brother, my butt.
Can you snatch my nut?
So, but I mean, some of the hardest habits to break, though, is like the high five. It's an instinct, right?
Yeah,
your teammate does something great. You want to give a high five? No, you can't do that. No congratulating anybody, no chest bumps, nothing. But I also think in baseball, it's almost inherent, like where you just expectorate. Like it just happens. It's just part of the thing. Now, Justin Turner from the Dodgers said it's going to be tough for everybody. It's almost second nature. Spitting for a pro baseball player is like blinking. It's going to be a tough habit to break. Just even spitting on the ground. You have routines and habits, and spitting is part of it. You can't even spit in your glove. Like, you normally guys spit in their glove to, like,
get something in
all
hand.
That stuff is out. So, Blitzer Prevent, we don't really want to know the germs that gather on the floor of a major league dugout, do we?
Yeah, blitz this. I mean, what about sharing a community dip? But they can't have the dip anymore, so now they're sharing sunflower seeds. What about that?
People
grabbing their junk and
seeds.
Then reaching in there, but they're getting in there to get the seeds out. Like, what about the bazooka gum? Like, you mean to tell me I got to chew all this gum and I ain't going to be able to spit? I'm supposed to swallow that? No, negative. How are they even going to enforce that? Is it like a warning?
Well, that's the other thing. You
get ejected, like, if you spit?
I don't know.
What if you got a mild cold and you got a loogie? You supposed to just swallow that?
Good point. A little mucus.
What are you supposed to do? You're just trying to get it out. Or somebody? Are you supposed to take a timeout and ask somebody, the ball boy, the bat boy,
to bring
you out of Kleenex?
You better wrap it up.
It's the return of the spittoon.
Ah.
Put it in the corner of the dugout. A little spittoon.
Oh, bro, let me tell you something. I think I had a friend that did that one time. He spilt his dip on one of our friend's shoe.
That's bad. That's the ultimate disrespect. You spit on a man's shoe?
Somebody got to die.
Like, yeah.
Because then you know it went through like the shoe and landed and it soaked in his socks. Somebody got to die.
In his sock.
I got tobacco juice in between my toes. Somebody got to die.
Like Earl's saying that D Nice can't even chew gum at practice. Can't even chew gum.
What is curl?
What is baseball without chewing gum and spitting seeds, man? Like, it just. But this is the reality.
First of all, that's how you stay up. Like, could you imagine just sitting in the dugout, then you out sitting in the outfield? You bored as hell. They chew the gum to keep themselves awake.
Hey, you want sports? This is what you got to do. You can't exchange jerseys. You can't high five your teammate, but if you need to adjust your TV, you're allowed to do that. Go right ahead and just adjust away. That's fine. Well, there's a reason why you wanted to hear these songs today.
Yeah.
You're feeling the verses, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping the verses, man. I'm hoping, you know, T.I. and this 50 Cent comes, because T.I. is equally as ignorant as 50, even though he's like little. You know, he always says 5'9 with the soul of a 6'9. You know what I'm saying? He said that all the time. But then, like, you know, we know that his history, like, we ain't never seen nobody really punk T.I., even though he's a little dude. We've seen 50 like troll. He trolls the champ in Mayweather, and like, we've never seen anybody kind of call 50 out. And he's calling 50 out. So I just think it's going to be entertaining, because, you know, we've seen some of these verses and they've been so nice. Most of them have been nice, other than Manny Fresh and I forgot the Scott Storch. That kind of got a little weird. But, like, with these verses, I think that hip-hop wins. And then you got two gangster rappers, trap rappers, you know, who's become commercial. Because now you see T.I., he's in videos and movies.
Oh, yeah.
He has the series about his family. And 50 Cent's become one of the best, producers of content. You know what I mean? He has a series on ABC. He had Power. He made a bunch of money. Got $500 million from that. You know, made money from Vitamin Water. So, like, we want to see, like, these guys now, and if they can still harness that streak trash talk that they had before. Because you notice their songs are a little bit different, because they can't be rapping about being hungry no more.
Well, it's
they full as hell.
It's like, yeah, exactly. And it's like Rocky III.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Hell, you ain't been hungry since you won that belt. Right?
They're all bumps.
Yeah. Like that. But that's
I'm afraid.
Right? I the tiger rock. I the tiger. Gotta get it back. Like that. That's legit. Like that. But that's the storyline there. Is you get rich, man. And you get soft. And you kind of lose connection to the streets and where you came from.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it harder. Like, people don't understand. Like, I would say hip hop more than anything is the hardest industry, that once you have success, it's almost impossible to stay, to stay grinded, like to be able to write the stuff that's like, if you make a ton of money, it's so hard.
But that's why Jay-Z had to switch it up, right? Remember, he was talking about the jerseys and not having women. Now he married with kids.
Yeah.
Had to switch coats because he got caught cheating.
Put on a suit, taper it up.
Yeah, Salons,
that's what he said.
Yeah, Salons beat him up in the elevator, got a bust lip by the sister. Now he talking about his queen. You know, my queen. Like, hold up, man. I'm looking.
It's
at
all relatable. No, but it's all relatable. Rappers are allowed to get old too, though. I'm all right with Jay talking about stuff I can relate to too now.
But this is
relationships,
the first era.
Being a dad, right. I'm cool with that. Just make it sound good.
But this is the first era where we finally starting to see our rappers get old.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, Grandmaster Flash, all those dudes. You know, they just starting to get old. Like Jay-Z, Nas, they're in their 40s now. You know what I'm saying? So we trying to still keep that energy. We like, hold up, man. You talking about knitting? Man, you knitting with your daughter? Like, hold on, Ice-T, man, you was talking about F the police, now you playing the police? Like, oh, man, come on, man. Here I am living my life in the hood, and I'm thugging out, and you sitting up here, you playing the police. Twice.
Oh, my God. Instead of he's going, we're playing bingo.
Right. Oh. Like, oh, man, I just got these new balances. They so good on your feet, man. My back feels amazing. Like, what the hell are you talking about, Ice-T?
These Skechers.
O'Shea, what the hell are you talking about,
so
Doughboy? Yeah. You know, I want to shoot you so bad that my skin hard. You were just trying to catch Nino Brown, man. Matter of fact, he was the police there too.
What did I just see Ice-T on? Was he selling like reverse
mortgage?
He's
selling cars. It's cars. It's like
it was
car
the cars
insurance.
Thing?
It's like car care or some stuff for your cars,
man. Yeah, that's what
extra
it was.
Extra insurance, man. Like, come on.
I'm not mad at him. Make money. That's fine. It's just, but you're right. It is kind of funny that this is what's happening.
But the person that listens to him always pivot last. Like, he's still been gangster. He don't realize that Snoop been married for, talking all this pimp stuff with Don Juan. Dude been married for probably for 20 years he been married. L's supposed to be this big player. This dude been married for 30 years. Ice Cube, 30 years. It's like, come on, man. You've been lying to my ass. I'm sitting up here trying to be a player, getting shanked.
The best is Snoop. Snoop's got kids. His one kid became a good football player. He was coaching football.
Little league coach.
It's great.
Here I am getting shanked by my wife and my girlfriend because I'm cheating, and you sitting up here, you loyal as hell. You done set me up for the band and tailpipe. I'm looking up to the wrong dudes.
Shorty, I told you to run a slant route.
Come on, man. Pippen, we going to lose this game.
Come
you
get
lose
that juice,
this game?
Come get that juice box, yo. Come get that juice box.
You ain't hydrated, man. I told you had to hydrate. You take your Gator Lights before the game, man. Oh, this man ain't taking no Gator Lights, man. You letting your team down.
You're showing poor sportsmanship. Oh, my God. It is definitely Epic Friday today, and we've got audio files.
The audio file.
So you remember Jim Harbaugh, as we didn't earlier in the week, and I know Anthony loves that I'm bringing this up. We didn't have the audio ready when I threw to it. So then yesterday we did have it ready.
Anthony didn't find it. Anthony didn't have it ready.
I mean, you know, mistakes happen. It's okay.
Anthony had to be better. He let us down that time. But footprints,
look,
it's that time where you carry him.
As I say, fallibility is sexy. I have no problem with me. If you want to make mistakes, that's good. And for Anthony, it's all right. It was, you know what's nice to know? That he's a human.
Yeah.
Right?
He's coachable.
Right?
You coached him up. You told him what you demand and what
he's
you expect.
He's a man. He's not a machine.
He's like, I must break you.
So that happened. But there's more Jim Harbaugh. More. Because we can't get enough of the coach talking about how important it is that they play college football. That college football lives on. That's important. Even though the Ivy League made a decision saying we are not. These are smart people.
The smart people.
We're not going to play it all in the fall. We're not doing it. And in fact, the Big Ten is saying we're just going to play conference schedule. Like, we're just going to do it that way. But for schools like Michigan, well, let's just say Jim Harbaugh has a different feeling about some of these other decisions. This was on Jalen and Jacoby.
I didn't say I had that sound.
That's right here.
Oh, you mean this sound?
As far as the Ivy League declaring that they're not going to play football, I don't see that right now. I don't understand why that would be a decision now. You still have time to learn things and understand things and determine whether, you know, what's the right thing to do, you know, come the fall. So, that would be, I think, the clear, simple choice is, you know, keep preparing. We got guys that have been training their whole lives for this opportunity and, continue to do that, continue to gather information, gather facts. And if it comes to a point where, you know, everybody can see it, this is, you know, we shouldn't be playing football or any other sport, and that's not the best interest, you know, for our kids, then everybody be reasonable and understand that you can't do it.
So he's basically saying that the Ivy League panicked and made a rash decision rather than be intelligent
Take your time and wait to the last second before you make a decision.
Yeah, probably some of those players there are probably some people that's going to be responsible for helping us find a vaccine. So I'd much rather them go use their brain power on that than losing brain cells hitting each other. We need those type of people. The people that's playing football in the Big Ten, not so much. So it's all good. Let smart people go do what smart people do. Let the Warriors do what the Warriors do. Let the smart people go be smart, because that's what we need right now. We need more smart people being smart. We don't want to hurt the smart people. Let's let the other people do what they do, man. Like, come on. Like, listen, and Harbaugh, this man, and I love you, right? You know, I helped you get Rashawn Gary. You know what I'm saying? I've done financial literacy programs with you guys. But listen, man, this may be your best chance to not lose to Ohio State this year if they cancel the season.
I just feel like I've always felt this way, that there's moments where you just have to decide that this is probably not a conversation I need to get involved in. Like, just let me just stay out of this.
Yeah.
Right. But instead, we're just going to be on every possible show now, just doubling down. Jaylen, I guess I give him – I respect him for that. I respect him for that. At least he's saying I'm sticking to it.
And then they're going to play each other. They're only going to play in Big Ten tournaments. So what are we going to do? Everybody's going to play, and then whoever the champion is of these tournaments are going to play for the national championship. How is this going to work?
It's a good question.
Like,
talk about Astros.
You talk about playing, but what are we playing for? If we ain't playing for no championships, then what the hell are we doing?
Like, well, you know what? You mentioned smart people. I would agree. I think you and I both agree. Paul Feinbaum, pretty smart guy.
Yeah, at least he has a smart look. He
looks smart. I guess you're right. If you're ever going to try to like look the part of a smart guy, that would probably be what you would look like. He does look like a bit like Mr. Garrison, though.
Yeah,
from South Park.
Okay, you know that's my name for Woody. I always smack him on his bad hip. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. I always call him Ms. Gary. Like, Woody Johnson looks exactly like him, too. You know, I would say Feinbaum looks like like if they had Armageddon 2, and he would take Billy Bob Thornton's part and tell him about how they got a drill through the rock. You know what I'm saying? And they bring him back and give him a space cadet.
I like
patch.
It. I like it. But anyways, Feinbaum was on Get Up, and it's an interesting take for him about, like, everybody saying why you should play. Well, or, you know, like, what is it? Give a good reason, though, of why football should be playing.
And one thing I would like to hear Kevin Warren or Greg Sankey or any of these commissioners say to you or me or anyone else, forget talking about whether we will play a college football season. Give us a reason why you should play a college football season. Tell us why it's worth all this effort. By the way, you're not allowed to say, if we don't play, we'll go broke. That's what this is about. This is a money grab, because I think if money was not an issue, some of these decisions would have already been made, like what they did up in the Ivy League. But right now, this is a house of cards. And, whether Joey thinks we're being negative or not, he did say one thing that was accurate. The numbers are spiking all over the country, especially in the South, in Florida. You can just look up and down the news channels for this. Mm-hmm. And it's a serious, serious problem.
It's always going to be about money, Bart. Like, I know he's right. They're not going to say it. But that's why these coaches are speaking out the way they're speaking out. I'm due to make $8 million this year.
Eight.
I've got
to. Ten, like, Nick Saban.
We got to play. And then you have the school presidents going, the football program is a very large part of our revenue for the school to stay open.
Four billy.
Yeah. So we kind of need to play. Like, this is very important. And the Ivy League's like, we have football.
Yeah.
We don't pay our players to play football. They don't get a scholarship for football, so it's all good. We don't have to play.
We got the amendment. They're going to go off and make $1 billion in the hedge fund.
The point is that the Ivy League schools aren't relying on football them through the part of their fiscal year. But exactly. SEC schools, Big Ten, all those schools.
TV contracts, TV partners.
We need to play.
That's all in the equation to make sure that they're bringing that money in. These presidents, they'll put them out there regardless. And whatever happened to the fact that if we don't have students on campus, then we're not going to force the athletes to play games. So, like, we hear Harvard, we hear some of the other places saying, hey, that, everybody's going to be doing class online. And, let's see what these other schools come up with. Because there's no way that you can put all students in a class because you can't socially distance. So if you're not being able to be in class on a regular term, how can we really equate putting athletes inside of classrooms or letting them play games?
You know what they're doing, Bart?
They're going to rotate them in.
I don't know. It's just my daughter goes to college, and this is what they're telling her.
you can come on campus, but some of your classes or most of your classes will be online. So we want you in the dorm because we've got to.
Because they want the room and board money.
Yeah, we've got to. Yeah, we need that income. Yeah, so you'll live here, but you'll quarantine in your room and you'll take your classes online. That's how they're going to do this. And yeah, then by doing that, they will say, we have students on campus.
Yep.
We can now play football.
I can do that at my mama's house, and you give me a rebate for what we spending for this.
Oh, why am I sending you? Just take the classes from home. But exactly. You know how an 18-year-old then says.
She want her freedom.
I want to go. I miss school. I miss my friends. I want to be. You're going to be locked in your room the whole freaking time.
No, she's not. She's going to be at the local bar. She's going to be at the local bar getting.
How dare you? My daughter does not go to bars.
Well, she's going to be at the bars telling
them.
She's going to be going to the bars telling them, go home and study. Socially
library.
Distance.
And then she might read a book. And then she goes to bed, wakes up.
She prays and she calls you.
Says prayers. Checks in with me constantly.
Meanwhile, her roommate is going to be running there doing the devil's work.
Can't speak on that. Can't speak on that. I'm just saying. Speaking of stuck in your room and miserable, NBA players are deciding that it's a good look to go on social media and complain about food that they're getting.
Yeah.
Right? Where, you know, again, as we, you know, remember when you were growing
bless
up.
Bless your heart.
People starving and you're going to complain about, you know, an abundance of food. So they're complaining about that. Rajon Rondo apparently took a shot at the room, called it a Motel 6 level room that he got at one of the nicest resorts at Disney. The Lakers are staying in one of the best spots, right? Well, and he's talking, calling it Motel 6. He takes a picture of it. I'm like, dude, that's a Four Seasons room. What's wrong with that room? There's nothing wrong with that room.
See, but it's a big difference between the one he got and the room that LeBron got.
Well, the reason why LeBron's not there yet is because they're still building his room.
Yeah. LeBron also is bringing his own chef. Yeah, so LeBron has a room. No, for real. He's bringing his own chef.
Reporting. Oh, you know
he's
this?
Yeah, they say he's bringing his chef. Oh, so LeBron's going to have his chef, and he's probably going to cook for his floor. He's going to get him the scraps.
I don't even know what you're talking about, Shorty.
whatever LeBron don't eat, he's going to put out. He's going to put out like they go all open right. And slide it underneath the door.
Well, LeBron
tell the peasants that they can have that.
Leave it outside the door.
Yeah, you can have it.
All right, I'm done with dinner. You guys can have the rest. All right. Well, one of his teammates or his new teammates is J.R. Smith. And he saw the menu when he got to Orlando, and he had a much different attitude about it.
Okay. New York strip steak? Ooh. Braised beef short ribs? Damn. What else we got? Shrimp and grits? With me. I with that cheesecake, though. They got that creme brulee.
And they got that creme brulee. He's the man that looks at the menu and goes, I'll take it.
Yeah, but you know what happens after week two, week three, you get tired. You only can put hot sauce on it, ask them to put teriyaki sauce on it this time. The menu don't change. They need a rotational one because you eat the same thing. And listen, you got to understand where J.R. Smith's coming from. J.R. Smith's coming from working out with my boy, you know, Gare at Tess right down the street from me. This is like heaven to him. He's back with the boys. He can care less. Listen, everybody else been living fat for the whole year. J.R. been grinding.
Yeah, to me, that's the better attitude to have. I'm just happy we're balling. I'm happy we are balling. I can fit whatever you want to feed me. Don't get all bougie NBA players. It's a bad look. Just to encore, though, as we get the calls going, Bart, as we opened up the show, Tom Thibodeau did have his interview, his formal one, yesterday, according to Woj. Mike Woodson interviewing with the team. Jason Kidd has already interviewed with the team. There are some assistants that are considered up-and-coming assistants that have been interviewing with the team as well. And I just, you know, you goaded me into it, so I took the bait of that dark horse name, that sort of name that's out there that you haven't really heard about, that isn't on the list of coaches they're interviewing, but you never know. And I feel like the obvious name here that I just won't let go of, even though he'll deny it, is John Calipari. And I just feel like it's just one of those things that if they aren't completely all in on Tibbs for whatever reason, let's say Tibbs wants his own coaches and they want him to keep Mike Miller and they want him to hire a couple of the young assistants, and he's like, I'm bringing my own people in.
Yeah.
And so they can't reach an agreement on that. And maybe Kenny, they don't feel is ready. Maybe they don't think Woodson moves the needle. Maybe Kidd, they worry about, you know, his consistency. And so does that make them say, why don't we just give Cal a call? Because we all know that World Wide West
and Leon Rose have had a relationship with Cal for many, many years. And on top of it, as I mentioned, Kentucky has the most players in the NBA currently than any other college program, and Cal has coached all of them. Yep. And relationships do matter in this sport.
And remember how we've been surprised the last couple of years, last couple of big decisions, the fact that we figured out that DeAndre Jordan and that, you know, that Kyrie Irving and KD were linking up together. We just honored the decision, which was Bosh and Wade and LeBron getting together. What's to say that we don't have those same conversations maybe with Calipari, Worldwide West, and maybe Devin Booker, or maybe, you know, Anthony Davis, saying, hey, man, listen, it's a real consideration that if you come back, coach, that, you know, I would ride or die with you. Just think of the type of environment.
I think you need that. You would need that call if you're Cal. If you got that call from, like, Anthony Davis, like, listen, if you take the job, I'm going to go.
Coach, we got your back.
Yeah,
coach, your back. We want to see you be successful. We got your back. They consider him like a father figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And how many players can say that they have that relationship with their head coach in the league? You know what I mean? That same type of relationship like I have with Rex. Like, you long for those type of relationships because you know that the guy's going to have your back. And then on the flip side, as a coach, you know that that player's going to have your back no matter what. It comes – the responsibilities from player to coach, not from player to player. You know what I mean? Because you're like, yo, man, it ain't nothing you can say about Calipari to Anthony Davis in that locker room. It's nothing you can say about to Devin Booker about that. It's like, no. Y'all either got to fix this or y'all need to go. Either y'all all in with this or you're not. So
loyalty's
to be able to create
everything.
To create that type of environment, that type of culture with the Knicks, and then have that same synergy with the coach and the general manager and the upper management all pulling the rope in one direction, man, that is something special that you can have. And Calipari is the only coach out there that can offer you that. So, it's, I mean, just, that is tough to say no to if it's a possibility, especially if they can bring stars.
It's a big if. Justin's in Williston Park. Let's grab him on this. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got
Born and raised in Kentucky. Lived in New York for about 10 years. It'd be really challenging for Jim Dolan to pull Calipari away from Kentucky. One, the money. Two, the power. And three, just the overall... cloud hanging over the Knicks.
Well, I don't. The cloud is something you remove from this, Justin. And be safe. It sounds like it's pouring out wherever you are right now.
I thought he was on the railroad.
Tell it's raining heavy right now. The cloud is the thing you remove because Cal's relationship with Rose and Wes is what matters most. It's the trust factor. Don't tell me about money. All right, there's no salary cap on coaching salaries. Okay, there's no cap on that. So don't tell me about the money aspect either. You know, if you want to say power, once again, he's got the guys in the front office that he knows. It's not like these are new. He's not interviewing people he's never talked to before.
Right.
If he was ever going to do this. And all I'm saying, Bart, is if there was ever a time, I'm not telling you I know anything. I'm just saying if there was ever a time, this would be the time because there's uncertainty about this coming season in college sports altogether. That's going to cost money for a lot of schools. One and done is about over again. The NBA is going to start taking 18-year-olds once again right out of high school. So that's going to be over. If he's ever going to do it, this would be the moment, and these are the guys that he would do it with. That's all I'm saying. If it probably won't happen, but it doesn't mean I can't ignore it. That's all I'm saying. It's just something you just keep in mind until they make a decision. I feel like that's like that wild card name that we are just dismissing. And I'm not sure we should dismiss. You looking forward to the weekend?
I am.
It's
almost this quitting time?
That's it, man. 20 seconds, and then we have like the Flintstones where
it's going to be
and we are out. And
it's going to be raining
K-show
all week.
Is taking over next. Yeah, it's going to be, well, everybody be safe. Hopefully the weather will be pretty good, but we'll see everybody on Monday. Bart, have a great weekend, and I'll see you Monday.
Can't wait.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.